All right, here's a story for you. In 1997, a Muslim zealot, a seemingly bizarre crackpot, one-time U.S.-backed freedom fighter against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, an obscure, disgruntled Saudi, declared war against the United States on CNN.
Due to its subordination to the Jews, the arrogance of the United States regime has reached the point that they occupied Arabia, the holiest place of the Muslims, who are more than a billion people in the world today. For this and other acts of aggression and injustice, we have declared jihad against the U.S.
The voice, through translation, of Osama bin Laden railing against the USA and the West back in 1997. Peter Bergen, you were in that room when that CNN interview was conducted, right?
Yeah, I was the producer. In fact, that's my I was the voice of the translator.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Does the hair stand up on the back of your neck when you think about what transpired after that 1997 interview?
You know, I mean, the interview, we were there to do a job, which was to hear what he had to say. Obviously, yeah, it was completely unpredictable that he would go on to do, you know, what he actually said he was planning to do. Imagine if the Japanese in 1937 started saying repeatedly, we're planning to attack the United States, how Pearl Harbor might have turned out differently. We were warned, you know, as we were discussing before this program started. I mean, you did some of the work on this when you were at ABC News about the phenomenon of these fighters in Afghanistan. And
well, let me just remind our listeners, you, Peter Bergen, warned us all about Osama bin Laden long before 9/11. He's the author of Manhunt, the 10-year search for bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. This really is the story of much of your career since the mid-90s. What was it like for you to finally put this story down here?
Well, I mean, it was, I hesitate to use the word fun, but it was, you know, I mean, I found it writing this book to be highly enjoyable most of the time. You know, it's an area that I've been working on for a decade and a half. It's somebody that I've been thinking about, Osama bin Laden, for a long time. I went to Pakistan 3 times to report it. I was able to get good access in the White House, CIA, Department of Defense, Director of National Intelligence Office, and other places that were relevant. And I think it tells a, you know, an interesting tale and a well-sourced tale.
One of the amazing things that you read in this book, Manhunt, is the political inner workings of al-Qaeda and the extent to which bin Laden was revered by some, but actually not revered and openly defied by others within al-Qaeda. Tell us a little bit about that story, because it really tells a tale of bin Laden as a relatively conservative leader who didn't really like innovators and entrepreneurs coming in to hone in on his action.
Well, you know, a picture emerges from, I was able to review some of the documents that were found in the compound in which bin Laden lived, and they're sort of bin Laden unplugged. I mean, he obviously never thought these massive memos that he wrote to subordinates would end up in the hands of the CIA. And they paint a picture of a man who was a micromanager. He would often tell, you know, his group, well, for instance, to give you one example, the North African affiliate of al-Qaeda, he was recommending they plant trees. So that they in the future they could use these trees for cover in military operations. Well, I mean, I think the North African affiliate of al-Qaeda has more pressing issues than sort of planting trees, which after all would take a long time to grow. He was also sometimes a little off the wall. For instance, you remember Faisal Shahzad, the guy who was trained by the Pakistani Taliban, planning to blow up a bomb in Times Square on May 1st, 2010. Bin Laden said, hey, this guy's a naturalized U.S. citizen who's sworn an oath of allegiance to the United States. You know, good Muslims shouldn't break their oaths and their covenants. And therefore, you know, we don't want to recruit naturalized citizens, which is a very strange. I mean, his subordinates must have been scratching their turbans, sort of saying, well, huh? I mean,
well, he's, you know, he's part cleric, part terrorist, part warlord. It's hard to know. And in this book, you really do scratch your head trying to figure out who the character is behind this. You know, one of the things you describe in here also, you were one of the first journalists, I think, who coined the phrase that al-Qaeda is kind of a franchise operation, that it basically encourages people to submit plans. And one of the plans that you report on in here is somebody wanted to fit a tractor with a set of whirling blades and drive it into a crowd. And this is something that bin Laden even thought was too barbaric.
Yeah, this was in the English language al-Qaeda magazine published in in Yemen. Mm-hmm. But and Bin Laden was sort of saying, you know, I want to know more about this, and this doesn't sort of seem right and doesn't fit with our values. I mean, there's a very sort of strange sort of hypocrisy in some of these documents that were recovered. You know, Bin Laden is telling his Somali affiliate not to attack civilians in Mogadishu and to focus on attacking African Union troops. Well, you know, for somebody who'd ordered the deaths of 3,000 American civilians in the course of a morning, you know, his solicitude for, you know, civilians seems kind of strange. Now, admittedly, these are Muslim civilians, and Bin Laden well understood that Al-Qaeda's actions in Iraq, the fact they killed so many Muslim civilians, had really damaged the brand. And he was telling his other affiliates, do not make the same mistakes that Al-Qaeda made in Iraq. Don't kill local tribes. You know, behave, you know, start thinking a little bit more smartly and more politically.
Let's shift the focus to the perception of Bin Laden in the United States. How did that change? It went from a situation where Bin Laden was barely on the radar, except with a few investigators, to him being sort of the entire story. Is it the case that Bin Laden was under important in U.S. policy realms and then became over important as time went on after 2001?
Yeah, I mean, I think, John, I think you've hit it on the head. You know, there was... It's now that we've got some time after 9/11 for a lot of people seemed like the beginning of something. In fact, it was the end of something. Mm. It was the climax of Al-Qaeda's activities. It wasn't the beginning of some, you know, sort of campaign that would look like this. You know, they did the embassy attacks in Africa, the attack on the USS Cole. 9/11 was their big thing. They never, you know, they never recovered. In fact, you know, one of the points I try and make in this book is that, you know, Bin Laden was told by people within the group that maybe attacking the United States before 9/11 would not be a smart idea. Mm. Maybe not religiously sanctioned, maybe something that would anger the Taliban, and also would be a problem, that his analysis the United States would pull out of the Middle East after such an attack was wrong, and it was. I mean, so the attack was sort of Al-Qaeda's Pearl Harbor. It was a tactical victory, but it led to their strategic defeat in the end.
You know, one of the amazing details, again, when you describe the Abbottabad raid is and again, there's so many details in here, but one I want to focus on is they thought that they were going to get away with this, the SEAL Team 6, completely undercover of any radar, but for the crash of that helicopter. When that helicopter went down, they realized this was going to be public in Pakistan, and they had to completely change their orientation. How did you learn about that?
Well, I mean, they had gamed out every scenario. And there was a scenario, by the way, where Bin Laden wasn't there. It's a covert operation. It was the reason that Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA, was in charge, is it was covert and deniable. And obviously, as you pointed out, once the helicopter crashed, this is a public event now. But, you know, if Bin Laden hadn't been there, you know, one of the ideas was we will say nothing. We'll just go in. He isn't there. The Pakistanis have reason not to necessarily say that we got in without them knowing. You know, maybe people on the ground knew something weird happened, but we'll just deny it. And so I talked to a number of people in the White House who, you know, were in charge of the messaging strategy, because they had a whole set of kind of talking points for every conceivable kind of outcome. One of the reasons I think that, you know, the one thing that I think they didn't completely prepare for was sort of catastrophic success. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that the day next day there was sort of mixed messages about what actually happened. It's the fog of war. It's an event that happened in the middle of the night, 7,000 miles away. But, you know, everybody had been up all night for, you know, the people had been, you know, they're all exhausted. But I think that, you know, they gamed out every kind of disaster very well. And the one thing they hadn't completely thought of was, okay, what if we get it completely right?
Million-dollar question. Do you think if that helicopter hadn't gone down and they'd maintained total secrecy, that they would have captured Bin Laden alive and brought him back?
I mean, Bin Laden would have had to conspicuously surrender. Now, it's the middle of the night. In 15 minutes, they killed Bin Laden. They also killed, you know, four other people on the compound. They wounded two others. I mean, they were, you know, a SEAL Team 6 operation is not a, you know, humanitarian rescue
right.
mission, usually. So Bin Laden always said that he was willing to die. And people, I think, like myself, who've been studying him, always took that at face value. And in the end, he went out not with a bang, but with a whimper. He didn't have a spectacular martyrdom. I got inside the compound where he lived. You know, he died surrounded by his wives and children in a squalid suburban compound. It wasn't the kind of spectacular death that he probably wanted.
An extraordinary story told by Peter Bergen, author of Manhunt, The 10-Year Search for Osama Bin Laden from 9/11 to Abbottabad. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.